This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at REACH 2015, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders on March 19 and 20, 2015.
Lord, we just come to you at the beginning of this session, and we ask for your presence here, that you would guide what is said, and that you would guide how we live out what is taught. In Jesus' name, amen. Graduation, what then? I'm assuming that most of you are somewhere near graduation age. I see there's a few exceptions around, but most of you, I assume, are near graduation age. And if you are about to graduate, you are approaching a time of change. If you are about to graduate, the time of summers off will probably soon be over. The time of starting work at 8:30 and getting off at 3 will probably be something that is a thing of the past until you're about 70. So there's a number of things that will change after graduation. And just in case you thought graduation means that you know everything, I want to assure you that education does not ensure smartness. It reminds us of the story of the scientist who was using the inductive method of reasoning to observe the characteristics of a flea. So he got a flea, and he plucked a leg off the flea, and he ordered it to jump. And the flea jumped. Taking another leg off, he again commanded the flea to jump. And the flea jumped. So the scientist continued that process, leg by leg, until he came to the sixth and final leg. And at this point, the flea was having a little more difficulty jumping, but was still trying. And the scientist pulled the final leg off and again ordered the flea to jump. The flea didn't respond. The scientist raised his voice and demanded, "Jump!" The flea again failed to respond. So for the third time, the scientist shouted at the top of his lungs, "Jump!" But the hapless flea just lay there motionless. So the scientist made the following observation in his notebook. When you remove the legs from a flea, it loses its sense of hearing. Education does not equal smartness. But I'm assuming you're here because as you get to graduation, you are going through a transition and you want to see that transition go well. You want to find God's purpose as you transition. And transitioning well doesn't just happen. Some people find themselves coming out of high school and struggling. Some struggle for a year or two. Some struggle for a decade, and some struggle for a lifetime to transition well. And I believe that you are here because you want to transition well. So the first step is to think a little bit about what would it look like if I would transition well. The old saying is, he who aims at nothing will hit it every time. So first of all, what would success look like for you as you transition from high school into life? If you have a pen and paper, I ask that you would get it. If you don't, you just take an imaginary pen and imaginary paper in your head and get it ready. And I just want you to write down, just very briefly, what would success look like for me 2 years from now? So just go ahead and take 90 seconds and write down, what would success look like for me 2 years from now? Where do I wish I would be 2 years from now? Go. All right. Well, I can't guarantee that at the end of this session, you will be assured of reaching whatever it is that you just wrote down. But I want to suggest 5 steps that will hopefully help you move in the direction of success. 5 words that I believe can be key in helping you or us to find God's purpose for our lives. And as you think of leaving high school, to help find God's purpose. So there's 5 words in my presentation, so hopefully easy note-taking, and you never know, there may be a test. All right, so the first word is strategize. If I want to get from here to there, there are some things that need to be clarified. And so there's a couple of things that I want you to get. And the first get is get clear. Who is calling the shots in my life? Am I really sold out for God? And we heard a powerful call this morning from Gary to make sure that our priorities are right, that we have a vision for serving the Lord. But the question that each of us needs to answer is, do I really want to glorify God? Or there's some alternatives out there. Do I want my entire youth group to ogle my car? Are my clothes designed to draw attention to me? Or do they camouflage me so that I reflect God's love? Do my words and actions suggest that I live for God and others? Or is it about the big I? What is my ultimate purpose? Christ calls us to lay down our lives for the kingdom. And as my friend Rick Rhodes said, it has become very fashionable in our circles for us, instead of laying down our lives, it's become very fashionable for us to keep our life and ask God to bless it. Living for two masters is challenging, confusing, and disillusioning, both to me and to others. So the starting point, as you think about strategizing or preparing for the future, is to get clear. Who's in charge of my life? Is God really in charge? Am I really saying, here I am, Lord, send me? And I'm going to assume that's our starting point, because if we don't start at that point, it's going to be really hard to succeed in many areas of life. But we start off with, here am I, Lord, send me. You're in charge. So get clear who's in charge. So what are some other things we can do to strategize or to prepare for the future? The first one was get clear. The next one is get free. There are many young people who at your age voluntarily put themselves into bondage. And there's different ways of putting yourselves into bondage. You can put yourself into bondage with debt. You can buy a little more car than you can afford. There's other things you can invest in. I'm guessing there's a few toys the young men here could name that are very cool and cost a few bucks. And many, many people, 18, 19, 20, they spend more than they have, and they put themselves into bondage. So first of all, be free financially. The second one is to be free morally, to get a clear conscience. I know when I was a very early teenager, 13, 14, that age, I did some really stupid things that I was not proud of. And throughout my teenage years, those things bothered me. And I prayed and asked the Lord to forgive me for those things, but they kept coming back and haunting me. Yeah, I became a Christian. Yeah, I prayed and asked for forgiveness. Yeah, I took communion. But I would still, when it came down to, man, if I were to die right now, I don't know. I'd ask for forgiveness again. Those things kept haunting me. And I believe the reason they kept haunting me was because there were things that I had done that involved other people. And I had never gone back to those people that I had done things to or were involved in things that I had done And it asked for their forgiveness. And so I carry this on my conscience. And so through my teenage years, 16, 17, 18, 19, I carried this on my conscience, and I was bound. And so I just lived in a every time communion came around, I'm like, okay, I'll pray again. But finally, I said, all right, I got to do whatever it takes to get free of this. So I started going back to people that I had wronged in one way or another and asking for their forgiveness. And you want to talk about something that's tough when you're 19 years old to go knock on a neighbor's door and say, you know, when I was 13, I did such and such. That was wrong. I'm sorry. Can you forgive me? Some of the hardest things I've done in my life. But when I walked away from their door, I was free. At some point, I was like, I don't even know if this is God or Satan just throwing this in my face, but I knew once I had asked forgiveness from them, I knew it was clear. And that process of going back to people continued on into my 20s. It wasn't until I was probably about 24 years old, the last person kind of on my list that I had wronged way back, that they moved out of state, I didn't know where they were, and here I was married, I was at a wedding, and here was a person that I had wronged. And one of the hardest things to do, I went up to the person, I said that I had done something, they didn't even remember it. And yet I had been bound for 10 years by that, carried that around. But I asked for forgiveness, they granted it, and I was free. Get a clear conscience. Be free. Because when you have that freedom, you're free financially, you're free morally, your conscience is clear, then you have the freedom to serve, to go, to have confidence wherever you go. Get clear, get free, get real. Who am I? As you think about strategizing and preparing for life ahead, get real. God created you uniquely. Sometimes we think that anybody can do anything, I think. At least we live that way. But no, God created you, Logan, with a particular set of gifts and skills. And he created you to be able to do certain tasks. Tasks that Amber cannot do. And so as God has created us with particular gifts, it's our responsibility to learn to know what those gifts are, to get familiar with them, to learn what it is that God put us on this earth for. As we think about finding out what it is that we're good at, what gifts God has given us, there's different tools. At our school, we use a tool from Crown Financial Ministries called Career Direct, just to kind of do an inventory and say, what is it that you're really interested in? What is it that you would be good at? In the adult world, we use a tool called the DISC profile. I was recently working with a candidate for my school, an employee, and so here's a person in midlife, and I sent him a link to this profile. I purchased it, sent it to him. He's supposed to take a 15-minute test, and this guy's like, wow, I had no idea. I've been studying that test ever since you sent it to me. It's telling me things about myself that I never knew. And so in 15 minutes, I take this test, and it tells me a lot of my strengths and my weaknesses. It says, Glendon tends to be very warm, enthusiastic, and friendly. He tends to be very approachable, expressing his approachability both verbally and non-verbally. So that's nice. But then it goes on to say things about what Glendon is scared of, what kind of situations Glendon avoids. When Glendon gets cornered, how he reacts, how he tends to make decisions, and some of the problems that can happen with his personality type. It tells me what kinds of things I'm motivated by, which most of them is like, oh yeah, I see that. But I didn't really think about it until I saw it on a piece of paper in front of me. Glendon wants an environment which provides certain things. So as you start learning who you are and where you fit in life, it's really helpful to start understanding what it is that you do. Things that Glendon tends to avoid, routine, repetitive tasks. I don't like them. Glenda would increase his effectiveness by, I can't say that out loud, my students are here. Glendon may become demotivated when certain things happen and in a conflict situation. So it's an incredible tool. So I'm not saying you all have to go take a disc, but I'm saying there are tools out there, and pay attention when you get an opportunity to do one. If you file a job application and they give you one for free, it's even better. But get real. Find out who it is that you are. And the last one of the gets is get trained. Get trained and add value to your life. People skills are one of the most powerful things that we can add to our life. Indira Gandhi said, I suppose leadership at one time meant muscles, but today it means getting along with people. Can you receive and give criticism? Can you, in your youth group, in your group of friends, can you criticize each other and be okay with that? Can you both give it and receive it? As I deal with adults in different organizations, once in a while I'll run into an adult who either is deathly afraid of giving criticism, which can create a lot of problems, or who becomes extremely offended if you try to give them some constructive criticism. And so learn to give and take feedback. This one isn't in the script. Taking feedback got me married. Does that sound right? That isn't right. But one of my friends, my wife is sitting here, so one of my friends chewed me out, and it led me to a decision to get married. Can you imagine that? That's pretty weird. You see, Starla and I were very good friends. I was the president of the youth group, and she was the secretary, and we were very good friends. But I wasn't really thinking hearts over the relationship or anything. We were just really good friends. And so one of my best friend's sister, she was older, and she came to my best friend and said, Glendon is getting way too close to that girl because he is like going to break her heart if he doesn't watch it. He better chill if he's not planning to do something about that. And so my friend comes up to me and says, Glendon, we need to talk. You need to seriously chill in that relationship with that girl because you're going to really hurt her feelings. And I thought, some of the advice I've heard is you don't marry the person that you think you can live with. You marry the person you think you can't live without. And so that brought me to the point of saying, can I live without this person? Because I really valued that friendship. And I got to thinking about that, and I decided, I think I'm going to have to do something about that. So I took her parents for a nice little buggy ride in Amish country, and I asked them if I could date their daughter, and they said yes, and she said yes, and we lived happily ever after. Now, where was I in my notes? Get trained. And I said people skills was the first one. Give and receive criticism. Work on a team. Communicate clearly. Moses got sent to the backside of the desert for training. God sent Moses to the desert for 40 years to learn a few things. And I got sent to the backside of a horse for 3,000 miles. Was one of my training things. When I was younger, I got sent to, I worked for Abe's Buggy Rides. And so my job was to ride around in a buggy, and that's directly behind a horse's posterior. And so I spent about 3,000 miles riding around behind a horse, talking to tourists from New York and New Jersey primarily. And that was a training session for me. It was a great job because it taught me a lot, and it paid. But it was one of those things where a significant piece of my income was tips, so if I really ticked people off, that generally didn't work well. And I needed to talk all the time. And I got asked every possible question about Anabaptists. And so I just got grilled day after day after day. That was one of my training systems. I had a job that was actually a way of getting trained. There's other ways of getting trained, though. There's technical skills. You may be able to get training in a trade, get training in software, You may get trained by your mother in how to prepare food, guys and girls. Those are skills that may come in later. Get trained. So what you're at a part of your life where prepare, strategize. So first of all, get clear, get free, get real, get trained. I was talking to a young man recently where he told me that, insinuated to me that he really did not need any additional training. He said, I'm going to the mission field. I really don't need any training. I mean, after all, if I become a missionary, they're required to accept me. I don't really need anything, right? I mean, like, as long as I'm VNV, vertical and ventilating, breathing and standing upright, they need to accept me on the mission field, right? If we can learn skills, if we can bring things along with us, we increase our value and our value to the ministry as well. So don't be afraid to go to further training. And there's four areas that I've especially invested in training in my life, and I've never regretted investing in training because those trainings that I took have been keys that have unlocked doors for me all throughout my life. Back when I was, 21, 22, something like that, I went to training to be a peacemaker. It was a place called LaVorp. It's in Lancaster City. They have a place for juvenile offenders where when they get arrested the first time, instead of just throwing them into the juvenile system, they give you the option of instead meeting with a counselor and working out a plan for restitution that gets accepted by the courts. So you go meet with a juvenile offender, a guy who just got arrested by the police, you go meet with him, you go meet with the person who he just robbed or bashed his mailbox in or busted his windshield or whatever he did, and then you try to bring them together to work out a plan where they work together. And I actually didn't take many cases, but I spent about 40 hours in getting trained how to become a LaVorp counselor. Do you know how valuable it is to be trained as a peacemaker throughout life? It's an awesome thing. I don't know really what got into me either. A year or so later, I forget exactly what the chronology was, but Life Ministries was offering a lay counselor training. And it's like, my counselor, for some reason, I signed up for it. And I think it was about 40 hours of training in how to be a counselor. Now, am I a counselor today? No, I'm not a counselor. But in that training, I learned that one of the most important things in caring for people is learning how to listen well. That lesson comes in handy, too. As time went on, I got wind that we were going to need a teacher at my home church's school. And so I was working as an electrician and thought, okay, well, they are going to need a teacher. I have a feeling there's some crosshairs on my back. Maybe I ought to get a little training. So I went over to Faith Builders, and I only spent about 4 months there, and I don't know that they've ever recovered since. Because me and his brother-in-law, Andrew Schmucker, we had quite the fascinating time there. I became the carrot-eating champion of Faith Builders. That's another story. But we just had a great time. And it was only 4 months of training, about. But then I went on to teach. I opened the door there. I taught for a year and said, wow, I kind of like teaching. Kind of don't like my salary, though. $8,000 for a year, that's not working real well. You know what? If I want to stay in teaching, I need to get a different plan. So I'm still amazed that as a young man, 19, 20 years old, I chose to go to college for 4 years. Nobody in my family had ever gone to a four-year college. I'm still kind of mystified why I did. But it was a choice I made to invest in further training. And that has just, again, unlocked doors for me all throughout life. As you look at investing in training, stopping and investing in training somewhere, whether it's vocational or in developing relationships, I just encourage you, don't be afraid to stop and invest in training. It looks long, the expense looks big, but it's something I've never regretted. So as we get to the end of the first one here, strategize or prepare. At the end of each one, I like to say, what is your role and what is God's role? So your role under this one is to learn disciplines. As you prepare for life, your job is to learn disciplines. What is God's role? God's role is to send challenges. You learn disciplines, God sends you the challenges. And he'll stir us out of our comfort zone. He'll make us uncomfortable. And it's in that process that we learn. And as we learn disciplines, we can succeed and move on to greater things. The second one is train. So again, the steps to finding God's purpose in your life, the S was strategize, the T is train. As we think about a scripture background, Jesus in the temple, when his parents, when Jesus was 12, his parents took him down to Jerusalem, and so he's there in the temple. He's chatting with the officials in the temple, and so they get lost and search for him for 3 days, and come back and say, "Son, why are you giving us gray hair?" And you know, it says that he then went home with them. He was subject to them, and then we have this big period where it's really quiet. We don't know really what Jesus did for a period of time. But the verse that I like here, Luke 2:52, "And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man." So what was Jesus' task? As far as we know, between the ages of 12 and 30, it was to increase in wisdom. And I like to define wisdom as viewing life from God's perspective. As we change the lens through which we view the world, to see it from God's angle, we're getting wisdom. So Jesus grew in wisdom. He grew in stature. A few of you might still add a little stature. When you get to my age, you add your stature horizontally. And then he grew in favor with God, something I think all of us can do, and grew in favor with man. Sounds sort of like people skills. He grew in favor with man around him. And so the second one here is to train, to keep working at what we need to do. And what does that working look like? In many cases, it simply means to be faithful where I'm at, to stick to it, to keep our nose to the grindstone. So where are you at right now? You're 17, 18, 19, I don't know, whatever age you're at. God probably has a task that he has assigned to you right now. And I don't know what that task is. Maybe you have a part-time job after school. Maybe you're bagging groceries. Maybe you help out around the place. Maybe you're simply helping out your parents in whatever enterprise they have. But most of you, I'm guessing, have a task right now. And so I just want you to stop a second here again and pull out your pencil, either literal or figurative, and just say, what is my task right now? Can you write down what my primary task is right now? And you know, maybe you have two, I don't know. But can you write down what is your task right now? What is your job? What is your primary assignment around home? What is your task right now? So under the training section, the call is to be faithful in whatever it is that I'm called to do right now. Am I doing it to the best of my ability? God's not necessarily impressed with the big plans you have for the future. He first of all is looking at how are you doing right now. Maybe, obviously, if you're still in school, a big part of your job right now is school. And how am I doing? Am I punctual? Am I reliable? The saying is that the key to success is found under your alarm clock. So first of all, are you just doing the basic things? Am I punctual? Am I performing? Am I respectful of my authorities? Am I getting better? Am I always trying to give a little extra? Am I passionate? Do I live in the present? I happened to look out the window of my office the other day, and I saw a teenager walking by my window. And, you know, about an hour later, I saw the same person walk by my window again. You know, and it would have been really fun to park a wheelbarrow in front of them. But it was just like, you know, I don't think they saw anything. around them. Instead of living in the present and just being vibrant there, they were stuck in the world of virtual reality. And I'm the guy that's live tweeting from the event here from the back of the sessions and all those things. So I'm not against technology, but make sure you live in the present. Don't get stuck in virtual reality. So the call in training is to be faithful where I am at. One of my first jobs out of high school, I said, was an electrician. And, you know, it was not exactly my dream job. I talk about, you know, I'd start work at 7:30 in the morning, and, you know, we get out to the job site at 8 or 8:30, and I would work for about 4 hours, and I'd look at my watch, and it'd be, you know, 9:30. And so then I get back to work and work for about another 3 or 4 hours, you know, and check my watch, and it's 10:15. Now, the days just drug when I was an electrician. Electrician might be the job for you, but, you know, it just wasn't mine. And eventually when I got into the world of education, the days just go, whew, they go like that. And so part of it was just recognizing something that fit me. So the call in the second one in training is to be faithful. Your role is to be faithful and obey. God's role is to assess our obedience and determine if we're ready for the next level. The next one is to envision, to dream. So again, steps to finding God's purpose for my life. Why did God put me on this planet? For what task did he put me here? How should the world be different when I step off of this planet? So God put me here for a purpose. What is it? What is God's heart? Where is his kingdom suffering? Again, Gary just really challenged us this morning to look outside of our worlds, to find needs, and to begin to meet them. I know when I was in my early 20s, I had a dream. I had begun to plan my life out. Okay, so when I turn such and such an age, I'm going to go to Bald Eagle Boys Camp. I'm going to do 2 years as a chief. After that, I'd like to go to this school, spend 4 years there. Then I want to do this. So I pretty much had my life all mapped out till I was 30. Well, then that young lady stepped into my life, and it kind of messed up the plan. And I'm very glad it did. But I had a dream. I had a plan. I wasn't killing time. I was going somewhere. And God, you know, he loves to steer us. But get a plan. What would God love to see you do? And start dreaming, trying to see what it is that you could do in God's kingdom. What is his goal for you? So your role is to look, and God's role is to help you see. But are you looking? Some people, they just kind of doze their way through their late teenage and early 20s years. So dream. The next one is to perceive, to listen, to begin to listen to the people around us. Who do you think God has placed in your life as your primary coach and person to listen to for guidance? Our parents. God's placed our parents in our lives as coaches. We need to be hearing them. So that's one of the voices we need to hear from. Scripture tells us, honor your father and your mother. And part of that is listening. So perceive. What is it they're steering us toward? Sometimes they may do things that they just want the best for us. They want us to be comfortable. So, you know, we listen to God's voice. We bring in our parents' voice. We honor them. But we want to hear what they have to say. We also pick out heroes. I've had a number of heroes throughout my life. I love this convention because over the last 2 days, two of my current primary heroes are or were here. People that I just admire and who've given significant input into my life. Another one that I had was, I served on a board a few years back where the chairman of the board and me got in a pretty nasty row. We got in a situation where me and another board member were having some fun during a board meeting, and somebody got really ticked off. And the board chairman sent me a scathing letter, and I was devastated. He's like, why? I'm just like, why didn't he say, hey, guys, knock it off? It would have been, he could have fixed it just like that. Hey, guys, knock it off. Instead, he sent me this letter. I was crushed. He's like, what do I do with this? And so he's like, well, you know, I'm a man. I got to deal with this. So I picked up the phone and I called my board chairman, and my voice was just shaking as I talked to him. And I was just, and you know, what's going on with the letter here? And we talked it through. And you know, when a number of years later, I got this phone call from these crazy people over at Effort of Mennonite School or whatever that place is. They said, do you want to be our principal? And I'm like, no, I don't want to be a principal. And I forgot about it. And then a couple of months later, their chairman called me again and said, hey, did you have enough time to think about it? Do you want to be our principal? And I was like, oh, yeah, I need to think about that. And so what did I do? I called up that chairman, the guy who was willing to give feedback in my life. I didn't appreciate the way he did it that one time. But as I had fixed the relationship, he's somebody I valued and was able to give me input. And he said, yeah, go be the principal at Effort Midnight. So here I am. Perceive, listen, get people into your life that you can listen to. And as you listen, people will quickly pick up what spirit you bring to the conversation. Do you have an humble spirit? Do you want to learn? Or do you have a cocky, I know it all attitude? So under the perceive section, your role is to hear. God's role is to speak, and God will do that, but we need to get our ears tuned. And the last step is to start. The old saying is, it's hard to steer a parked car. And so like with my life planned out to age 30, I was in motion. There was a plan. I had a part in God's kingdom. I was on the road. I was excited. And God said, not there. Over here. You need to pick somebody up, put them in the passenger seat. And then, oh, by the way, you need to swing over here too. You're not actually going to Colorado to university. You're going to Millersville. And he steered me. But as I got in motion, God was able to steer us. If you're like the Dodge or whatever that is up there, it's a little hard to steer if you're just parked. So you're at a transition stage of life, graduation. Don't stay parked there. Get in motion. Learn active waiting. One of the things that we did around this stage of my life, I forget exactly how old I was, but as I looked around at the needs, I recognized that we needed, some of us young fellows needed some accountability in our youth group. And again, I'm amazed that I did this. About your age, I don't know what was wrong with me, that I stood up and did this stuff. It's, you know, but as you yield yourself to God, he'll give you ideas. And sometimes they may seem crazy, but as I look back, they were blessings. So a couple of my friends, we got together and said, you know what, we ought to have a guys accountability group in our youth group. So we got together, I don't know, twice a month or something, Monday nights, we get together, and we'd have a time, had a partner, we'd go share, hey, what's going on in our life? How are we doing morally? What's happening? And then we'd show a video, I don't know, John Maxwell and leadership or something. We just kind of pulled things together. But it was a powerful time for us guys. Nobody told us to do that. We just did it. And as we worked there, some significant things came out of that. In our youth group, there was one guy that we had all just kind of ostracized. He didn't quite fit with the rest of the group, and we had kind of pushed him to the side and didn't even really think about what we were doing. And it was in one of those group sessions with the guys group that the older brother of this boy just took us to task and just let us have it pretty hard. He said, guys, the way you're treating this young man is wrong. You need to stop. And all the guys in our youth group just kind of woke up like, wow, you're right. And all of a sudden, we started to bring that young man into the group. I don't know exactly what effects that's had in his life, but I think it had to change a lot. And it's out of those groups where, as guys, we were talking about what was going on in our lives. One of my good friends, you know, talked till 1-2 in the morning about some of the things that he was going through. And I got this email that was a treasure for the last 10 or 15 years. I tried to find it this morning. I couldn't dig it out. It's back pretty far. And it was just this heartfelt email. Thank you for walking through me, with me through one of the toughest times of my life. And so as we start, as we move, God will direct us and he'll point out those things, whether it's guys group or whatever it is that he'll point out for you. Surround yourself with people that are headed in the same direction, people that have a vision to do what's right. You know, I think it's Dave Ramsey that says, if all the people you hang out with are broke, or if 90% of the people that you hang out with are broke, there's a very, 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 very high percentage that you'll be broke too. Now, I'm not saying that Dave Ramsey is right on every topic, but there's something too. Who you hang out with is who you're going to be like. Delight in new experiences. Develop a curiosity and love of learning. Embrace change. I cringe when I hear young people say, oh, I hate to try new things. Well, you're going to have a rough life, sorry, because life is full of new things. And if you can learn to love and embrace new things, new challenges, God will lead you very fascinating places, and you'll probably have a lot of fun along the way. But again, get started, move. And don't take the easy road. You know, the book out there, Do Hard Things, Rebel Against Low Expectations, good read. One of my friends who's actually here took a challenge, Urban Mennonite Ministries, Reuben Petersheim, a guy who was at Faith Builders and just got this vision. Wow, what if we would go into a city and start a school and would use that as a way of bringing the gospel to that city and maybe even start franchising it and taking it to other cities. Here he was. He didn't have some preacher telling him, you must do this. He didn't have a board that called him or hired him. He just said, you know, hey, that's my vision. I want to do this. So let's see, what do I need? Well, I should have some advisors. So he formed a board and, you know, got a few people around him to help, and he just went and did it. It's a beautiful thing as we step out and try to do hard things, not just coast along. So on the last one, start. Your role is to take action, and God's role is to direct your steps. So I believe as you follow these steps that you can be a person that transitions well. As you strategize, as you train, as you envision, as you perceive, and as you get started. God bless you as you take these steps, as you transition from high school into whatever it is that God has next. I just wish you God's blessing.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.